Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast. This is an analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is returning guest, Sergeant Sean Myers. Hi, Sean.
At ease, Kelly.
I'm always at ease. It's great to have you back for season two, my friend.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be back.
All right. Well, since you said you were on the show last year, we already know about your secret origin with MASH. We're going to jump right into the episode, which is from season two, of course, episode 17, For Want of a Boot. The original air date, January 12th, 1974, written by Sheldon Keller, directed by Don Weiss. Hawkeye is in desperate need of a new boot. The old one has a giant hole in the bottom of it, and with the brutal winter Korean weather, it's unbearable. Hawkeye and Trapper decide to lean on Supply Sergeant Zale, played by Johnny Hamer, who did order the new boots but can't explain why they haven't come in yet. Hawkeye complains, but Zale says he has it worse. He's in need of a bridge. Hawkeye hits upon the idea that if he can get the camp dentist to fix Zale's tooth, will Zale expedite the boot order? Zale agrees, so Hawkeye and Trapper go to see Dr. Futterman, played by Michael Lerner, who says he doesn't have time for, quote, cosmetic work. Futterman also mentions that he desperately wants to have some R&R in Tokyo. The doctors then turn to Henry, trying to get Futterman a pass, which will get him to work on Zale, which will get Zale to order the boot. This series of deals keeps escalating, eventually involving Radar needing a date, a nurse requiring a hairdryer, Klinger getting his Section 8 paper signed, which Hawkeye and Trapper hope they can get from Frank, and they butter him up with a big fancy birthday party with presents, as per Margaret. Everything falls into place until Frank flatly refuses to sign Klinger's Section 8 papers, which causes the whole house of cards to collapse. It ends with Hawkeye cursing the fates, screaming about how far he debased himself just to get a lousy new boot. Later, we see Hawkeye still waiting for his boots, using this time a golf bag as a temporary replacement. Or, Sean, you wanted to talk about this one. What's your feelings on For Want of a Boot?
I really like these kind of episodes. A previous episode I was on was the Long John Flap, and that's what
I was going to say. This episode is almost like a remake of that.
I love it. I love episodes or movies or shows where they follow one thing that goes through different people, or different people have to wheel and deal through, in this case, the camp, in order to get the end result. I love it. And in the comments on the website for Long John Flap, Randall said he doesn't like that kind of show. And he actually mentioned this episode. And I thought, wow, I'm a sucker for these episodes. It's interesting to see the path that either the Long Johns take or that the deal-making goes through the camp.
Right, right. In Long John Flap, it was an object that we were following from person to person. And here, we're following person to person, but it's you know, favors. We're trading favors back and forth. I think this overall is a much better version of that story. We'll get to there's an ending that there's a button on this episode, which I think is actually really, really kind of beautiful. And we'll get to that in a moment. But I just genuinely think this one's a funnier show. I think it has a little more depth to it, kind of. I wasn't a huge fan of Long John Flap, so I think – but if you're going to do this type of story where it's this round robin where you're going from person to person to person, I think they did a much better job with it. So I actually do like this episode. Now, it's historic in a couple ways because we meet Sergeant Zale, the supply sergeant, played by Johnny Hamer. It's the first time we see Sergeant Zale, this character. Johnny Hamer, who passed away in 1989, had a really pretty amazing series of credits. He was in Annie Hall. He was in Albert Brooks's Real Life, one of my favorites. He was a voice on Transformers. He was on The Jeffersons, Three's Company, The Plastic Man Comedy Adventure Show. Hey, Max. And Justice for All, Logan's Run, the Mod Squad, the original Star Trek. He went on to do 20 episodes of MASH before he was essentially replaced by G.W. Bailey playing Sergeant Rizzo, that kind of sort of ancillary character. But this is the beginning for him, where he was this kind of side guy that could come in and do various things. And of course, later on, they would establish that he and Klinger hate each other. That would be an ongoing thing, that him and Klinger just have no time for each other. But here, we're meeting him for the first time, and I don't know about you, but like when I watch this episode, I get frustrated a little because it's like, Zale, do your job. Like, all of this would not be necessary. If you just did your job, Zale, the guy needs a boot. This is, like, Hawkeye's not asking for, like, a jukebox or a pizza oven. He's asking for a new boot. Like, just get him the damn boot, Zale. I hate that Hawkeye has to trade favors for a guy to just do his job.
Right. The dentist, when the deal with the dentist, that's a little bit more understandable because it said it's cosmetic surgery.
Right. He's doing a favor. Right.
But yeah, this is his job. However, saying that, with dealing with the Army, and especially the Army as presented in MASH, I can absolutely understand that someone would do that. Yeah, I'll do my job if you give me something extra.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that. I mean, again, I feel like as much as I like Henry Blake, I think the camp is run a little more loosey-goosey under Henry. That would never happen under Potter. You know what I mean? Like, I think there was no way a supply sergeant under Colonel Potter's command could get away with basically saying, I'm not going to do my job unless you butter me up a little bit. No. That's not working under Colonel Potter. And the other character we meet, Michael Lerner, who plays Futterman. He's got a lot of creds. He was in X-Men, Days of Future Past, Barton Fink, of course, Glee, Elf, A Serious Man, Art School Confidential, 8 Men Out. He did the Doris Day Show with McLean Stevenson. He was in The Candidate with Robert Redford. This is the last time MASH will ever mention having a dentist. We will never see neither see nor hear of a dentist ever again. And I don't know whether in MASH continuity they didn't have a dentist anymore, or there was a dentist and we just simply never saw them again. Because, I mean, you would imagine you have to have a dentist at a camp, but we never hear about it after this.
You've talked about your imaginings between episodes and
right.
characters. That I think he's just part of that continuity.
Right. I mean, in between episodes, they went to go see a dentist, but we just never hear about him. And it's, you know, it's fine. But this is the last time they actually we actually do see someone. There is a nice moment. It's a subtle little beat, but in the opening scene where Hawkeye is talking about his boot and he's desperate to fill. First of all, he uses one of Frank's birthday cards from his wife to fill the hole, and Frank gets insulted by that. I'm kind of saying I'm on Frank's side on that one. I mean, come on, Hawkeye. That's kind of a personal item to use.
I have that in my notes. I am no fan of Frank whatsoever. He's a horrible doctor. He's probably even a worse person. But still, to take something that was sent from home from your wife, and I understand Frank's relationship with his wife, but so just something right. so personal right. and just steal it, that's probably the only time I can feel sympathy for Frank.
Yeah, I thought that was I can understand that. But the little bit in it that I really like is when they decide to go talk to Zale, and Trapper says we should go lean on the supply sergeant, and I like that he says we. I like that he goes with Hawkeye. Like, he doesn't just let Hawkeye go twist in the wind. He's going there to help his pal. I think that's like a subtle little thing because, I mean, we've talked about in previous episodes that how much Trapper really got sidelined in this show. They kept leaning more and more on Hawkeye. And this would have been a perfect moment to just cut Trapper out of the action, just have Hawkeye be doing it. But I like that Trapper's along for the ride. Like, I just think that's kind of a nice show of solidarity for his friend.
I agree, and it really does feel like a partnership. It doesn't even feel like he's just his sidekick along.
Right.
Because a little bit later in the episode, maybe you'll get to it, when they talk about Klinger being a pervert, and he says, well, I know he's not a pervert because he doesn't show up to the meetings with me.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like a scam episode. I've talked about in previous episodes. See, a lot more from season one that they were always kind of pulling a scam. And this isn't a scam because they're doing favors, and of course it's for the right reason. But yeah, I like the Trapper Arizona. I think that's really funny. Like I said, Michael Lerner as Futterman is very funny. He seems to have his own tent. Which is interesting. I mean, they even mentioned before burn you before you go down in the pits. I mean, it's sort of like we've seen Klinger gets his own tent and the dentist gets his own, the doctors have to live three up in a tent. But the dentist gets his own. And I like that all of his tent is decked out with all the Japanese stuff. I love he's got the Japanese robe and he's got a fan. He's got some statuary. He's got a bowl. He's got a calendar. Like he's really like they really established that he is just fallen in love with Japan. And I think a lot of people can relate to that where he even says, I think I was stolen by gypsies and, you know, spirited off to a Jewish family in West Orange or whatever it is, but secretly he's Japanese. I think a lot of us can relate to that feeling of like, you know, I was born here, but I really belong somewhere else.
I have it in my notes that probably everyone has worked with someone who's just been obsessed with something, whether it's comics or podcasting or TV shows or
for example, I don't know. Yeah.
Someone's always worked with someone who's just obsessed with something and they can just work it into any conversation. They can just talk about it forever.
That's yeah. I raise his hand. There's a little continuity error in that the scene just before they go to the dentist, when Igor is walking by with a stretcher and Hawkeye jumps on the stretcher and we get a big close up of the boot. The hole is in a different spot.
Oh.
Because the hole that we see in the beginning of the show is up by the top part of the shoe, and that's where the card gets stuck in. But when we see the boot again, the hole is in the heel, and the hole that was at the top has been filled in. So I don't know whether that's a different set of boots or nobody was paying attention, but the hole seems to travel in the boot from different place to place. But, you know, again, this is only because I've watched this episode 75 times that I ever even noticed that.
I'm disappointed because in my notes, I have literally, when you see Hawkeye's shoe with Frank's card, birthday card in it, that is exactly the same place that my shoes always wear out.
Hmm.
The exact same place. So I can't believe I didn't see it when he's on the stretcher.
Yeah, it's a big close-up of it. That's really kind of a weird, like, all right, that's weird, but all right, that's fine. Hawkeye does mention about if I can't get a boot, they should let me go back to my old shoe store in Vermont.
Yeah.
I have to assume that they still don't realize that Hawkeye is from Crabapple Cove, Maine, because if he lives in Maine, I imagine traveling all the way to Vermont to go to a shoe store seems a little impractical. So I guess at this point, he's still from Vermont.
That's one mighty cobbler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Later on, they move on into Henry's office. There's some weird staging here in that the whole scene is done in a chair where Henry is kind of off against the back wall as opposed to him sitting at his desk. And I always kind of wondered why Don Weiss, the director, put him here. Why not just have him at the desk? And then I'm thinking, well, he's there to wash his golf balls and he has this contraption with like a plunger and I'm guessing maybe they did that so they could fit that in. But doesn't it seem like just an odd place to have this scene as opposed to where we would normally see, which would be at Henry's desk?
I actually didn't think about it until you said it right now. And as you were talking about it, this just popped in my head. Maybe because there's so much dialogue about Margaret's report and Radar, the bit with the carbon paper and all that. Maybe because there's so much dialogue, they wanted some kind of like physical activity to happen while it was going on, maybe?
That's an interesting observation. But yeah, you're right. Maybe they figured that's just to spice it up visually. And he gets mad. I love that Henry is mad that he has to do so much paperwork because he's got to wash his golf balls. Like that's his number one priority right now is washing the golf balls. He's got the plunger. And you mentioned the bit with the carbon paper. Radar goes on this whole long thing about how he ends up with a copy of Margaret's letter that she's her report that she's writing to command a complaint about Henry. And he goes on this torturous thing about, well, I put it up and I steamed it and then I flipped it backwards and I rubbed some carbon on it. Like it's, and then he was like, you know, and he calls it an accident. And Henry's like, that's a hell of an accident. I love that. It's like that probably took Radar an hour and a half to do.
Spoiler alert. That is my favorite bit. And I actually even tried to write it down with the subtitles and everything. I'm like, oh, I just can't do it justice. But that is my favorite funny line, even though it's like 16 lines.
Yeah. I came across a piece of paper which she'd been typing with the wrong side of the carbon on. And he says, yeah, and then she transferred what she wrote on this piece onto this piece of paper. And he pulls up this piece. I could see what she wrote without holding up her mistake to her mirror. He's showing it to – and that was a terrific accident, Radar. I just – I love that Henry's tacit like, it's okay. It's fine. You know what I mean? That's good. So after, you know, Henry – they make the deal with Henry that Henry says, hey, look, if you can get Margaret off my back – I'll let Futterman have his pass. And of course, how are we going to do that? And they're going to have to appeal to Margaret. And Margaret wants a birthday party for Frank, a surprise party with presents. How the hell are you supposed to get anybody a birthday present at 477th? Where do you go? Was there a gift shop? What are you supposed to do?
You have to give something of your own collection and wrap it up.
I guess so, yeah. I love that in this scene, this is actually the first moment that Hawkeye breaks. where Trapper goes, it's a deal, and Hulk is like, it is not. He's like, I've had enough, you know. And he goes on this long speech, and he says, you know, this is a camp that spends all its time sticking its pins in little Frank Burns dolls, and he just completely blows it off. And then he walks out and walks foot first right into a giant muddy puddle. And I love that there's that slow pan up. And then Hawkeye immediately goes, I think I'll start with some hors d'oeuvres, and followed by a baked ham, and he immediately folds it. It's such a good, and Trapper doesn't say anything except he smiles. I love that he's just like, okay, yeah, we're officially changing course again. I think that's really good.
And that can be a metaphor for life, because you have something in your head that you're going to do something, and then something else in your life happens, and you're like, well, maybe I'll reconsider that decision.
Yeah. Later on, when they go visit Radar to get the all the cake and stuff for Burns, it features – this isn't my favorite joke of the episode, but it does feature one of my favorite lines. And it's a line that I use to this day where they said they're going to start being nice to Major Burns. And Radar's like, I thought you guys hated him. And he goes, yeah, we do. And he goes, we're going to be nice to him from now on. And if he likes it, we can always stop. I love that so much, that idea of just, I'm doing it just to torture somebody. It makes me laugh so hard. Yeah, I think that's great. And then, of course, Radar then is turning, is like, well, it's because of my, as he puts it, ... loneliness, and they have to figure out what they're going to do there. And he wants to get with Nurse Murphy, who they call the Wonder Nurse. Or Trapper, because Murphy, the Wonder Nurse, she's two people taller than you. And I love that. Be smart, Radar. Start in the boys' department and work your way up to the men's floor. So they try and, you know, they're like, okay, we're going to have to try and get Nurse Murphy on board. So then they move on to Nurse Murphy, and she is played by Suzanne Zenor, which is a hell of a name. She's got some interesting credits. She was in the film Get to Know Your Rabbit with Orson Welles. She was in The Way We Were with Robert Redford and Barbara Streisand. Played Against Sam with Woody Allen. The Moonshine War with Alan Alda. And her other claim to fame is she played a character who was very similar to Chrissy in the original pilot to Three's Company.
Oh, wow.
And then she was with one other actress and John Ritter. And apparently the network took a look at that pilot and said, get rid of the two girls, replace them with different characters, but keep John Ritter. So she, Suzanne Zenor, brush with fame, could have probably had a long run with Three's Company, but I guess it was not to be.
Wow, that's amazing. I never knew that.
Yeah, I saw that on IMDb, and it's like, I always wonder about that, because MASH has a little bit of that too, of like the heartbreak of being an actor, where like you get a chance to be in this thing that you've seen go on to this, you know, long run, and then you were almost part of it, but not quite. That happened with the actor George Morgan, who was in the pilot to MASH playing Father Mulcahy, and then they replaced him with, of course, William Christopher, and then William Christopher had 11 straight years of employment. And I have to wonder, if you're an actor, does that just, I don't know, do you have to just get used to it, or does that eat away at you, that you're like, oh man, I could have been on Three's Company. I could have run for 7 years.
I guess it really depends on what type of personality you are. I mean, you can let it eat you up, or you just have to understand that's part of show business. I mean, I'm sure there are 10,000 stories that people have that happened to them.
Yeah, I would probably let it eat me up. So it's probably a good thing that I'm not an actor, because I think that would just haunt me to have to see it every week on television and seeing it's this huge thing. And you're like, oh man, I was so close to doing it. So then they move on to Klinger, and Klinger has the whole bit about, I need to get four officers to sign my Section 8 papers. That MASH never got rid of that until Klinger took over for Radar, essentially, and he stopped doing the Section 8 bit. But that that plot has never made any sense, because I don't believe that Klinger could not find two nurses to sign his Section 8 papers, because they're all lieutenants. They're all officers. We all know that Hawkeye and Trapper are on board, so he's halfway there. So out of all the nurses, he couldn't get – like, that makes no – unless it's the nurses don't count – but you would think they would. They're officers. But that detail has never really made any sense to me.
I agree with that. Also, obviously, I love MASH, so I think it's okay to say a little bit negative things. I just think that part of the plot line doesn't hold up, because you know that Frank is not going to sign this paper. Like, I don't care how many presents you give him, a party, you say he's a nice guy. You just know he's not going to sign.
Yeah. You would have to get him drunk maybe he would do it, but not yet. No matter what party you throw at him, it's not going to happen. We have a scene with Hawkeye, with Frank and Margaret, where she gives him a gift for his birthday, which is a riding crop. This was something that mother gave to dad on their wedding night or whatever. So again, another bizarre insight to the Houlihan's marriage.
And you've talked about Margaret's obsession with her father.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of weird stuff. There's a lot of Oedipal. I guess, is it Oedipal if it's that way? I guess it's not Oedipal. Oedipal is only means with your mother, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Whatever that version of the male daughter version of Oedipal is. But she's definitely way too enamored of her father in some ways. But then again, there's this nice little moment where she says, we're going to have a dinner, just the two of us. Now, of course, she's lying to Frank, but he says, just the two of us. And he goes, isn't that sad? And I don't know. I always found that line very sad, that that's not enough for Frank. Like, Margaret really does like Frank. And I would think if you moved all the way to South Korea to serve in a war, you'd be lucky if you found someone who wanted to spend that much time with you. There's he doesn't appreciate her as much. That line always makes me feel melancholy, that that's not enough for Frank.
I think maybe if it were just a regular Saturday night, it would be fine. I think it's because of the birthday. And it,
I guess, yeah,
it points
I guess
out so. How much he is not liked by people because of the kind of person he is.
Right. He has the line about when he was a kid, my mom had to, for my birthdays, had to send out 30 invites to get four kids to show up. And so that's, again, we get another insight into what Frank's life was like as a child. We will hear some other stories in later seasons about that Frank didn't come over here and became terrible. He was a terrible person from almost childhood. That's just kind of who he was.
In that scene, I do like where he said, I've told people I'll never talk to them again, and they sent me thank you notes.
Yeah. Yeah. back at the party, it seems to go reasonably well. I like the where Margaret says to Frank, they really like you, Frank. And Frank's like, it was their hatred that fooled me, which is great.
This episode is filled with great one-liners like that.
Yeah, I love it. It's their hatred that fooled me. He gives the speech. And of course, he has to even insult them kind of in the speech where he says, I think you're all a bunch of swell eggs, even if some of you are a little cracked,
yeah.
Which gets no response. Nobody laughs except for Margaret. They're all just staring off into the middle distance like, all right, whatever. But then he said it all falls apart, as you said, when Frank refuses to sign, which, of course, you knew was going to happen. There was no way that Frank was ever going to go along with this. And so, yeah, then the whole thing falls apart. And unfortunately, I find that scene so frustrating, because at some point, some of the favors that have been – they've already been done. There's no point to undo them. You know what I mean? Some of them already – and you're like, well, now you're just taking it back because you're just being mean. You're just mad.
Right.
It's not because you didn't get the thing you wanted. You know what I mean? So it's a little frustrating. Poor Hawkeye. He's trying so hard, and then everyone's working against him here.
I even like the way it's set up, because right before it unravels, everyone kind of repeats what the favor was, and they're happy mm-hmm. that the favor is coming through.
That's true. Right, right. We get a restating of what it is. And I don't know if you noticed this. It took me a bunch of times, but when Hawkeye's going over the gifts, you see Radar is refilling Frank's glass full of liquor without him even noticing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I have to figure they figure that that's the way they can get it, is to ply him with liquor. But I love that it's in the background. You see Radar just pull his bottle out, dump a bunch of liquor into Frank's glass without him even noticing, and then pull it back again. So they're just hoping they can get him completely loaded.
That's a great detail.
I love Radar in his dress outfit, where he's got the coat on and he's got the neckerchief.
I was just gonna, the cravat.
Yeah. And then he says to Klinger, who's your date with? He says, Nurse Murphy. And then Klinger says, you're going to work without Annette, which is that's a great line too. They get the cake, and the cake is, kind of a standard little sheet cake thing. And again, that's the line he says, it's their hatred that fooled me. And then they said everything falls apart. He said the Radar doesn't get his – he takes the cake away. The Klinger retracts the hair dryer from Nurse Murphy right at the part where Radar shows up, which Radar, he's more kind of got Gary Cooper-ish. He's more ish than Cooper, of course. He shows up with the flowers, and Nurse Murphy is like, unless you're going to plug yourselves and blow on my hair. So that falls apart. And then Futterman's pass gets rescinded, which there – because we see the Margaret where she calls Henry Colonel Drunky John, which is a great little detail. And like I said, it's just, you know, you're just like so frustrated because, you know, it's like poor Hawkeye. Oh, he's not asking for anything special. He just wants a boot that works, for Christ's sakes.
Exactly, yeah. Standard issue army gear.
Yeah. I mean, how's he supposed to, you know? I love when they when they're trying to appeal to Bernie as he's storming out, and Trapper says, "I'm sorry about Pearl Harbor. It'll never happen again."
That's a great detail. I also like, going back just a little bit, I love the actual visual of Murphy and Radar together, because then you really see the difference, how much she towers over him.
Yes. Yeah, he is. He's like barely up to her clavicle almost. Yeah, and he's standing there with those cheap little posies or whatever she's got. And like I said, then the episode ends with, you know, the Hawkeye talking about how much he debased himself and what he got through. And it ends with him. And then he sits right outside the swamp and he goes through the whole plot. Because otherwise, we get Radar with the hairdryer. Blah, 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 blah. It just ends and that's it. The whole thing is over. And then we have the final button on the episode. And this is the thing which I think makes this episode a little more than, I would say, the Long John Flap, is that they talk about, because Radar, excuse me, I keep saying the wrong names. Hawkeye's under the blanket and he's talking about, you know, he's going to get the boot. And then he says, we're going to start sometime. Come on. And he gets up and we see that he's wearing the golf bag, and they use the little MASH sting at the end. And it's kind of got this melancholy tone to it. Mm-hmm. And even though it's a goofy visual and he says four, which is meant to be a gag line, I like the way the music is like the counterpoint, because it's almost like reminding you, not only do these people have to work, do incredibly hard work, sometimes even their own unit was against them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? All Hawkeye's trying to do is just have a boot that works, and look at what he had to do for all this. And it was all for naught. And I just kind of like that slightly melancholy ending. I think it's kind of a nice button on this episode.
I mean, if you examine it, it really isn't a happy ending. No, no. It's not what they wanted. He didn't get his boot.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's just sort of frustrated. So that's the end of it. And it's just like, of course, you know, Hawkeye, the boot would get, you know, he'd have a regular boot if this is the next episode. But God, yeah, it is. They managed to wring some pathos out of a very silly premise.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is really effective. So good on you, Sheldon Keller, who would only have one more episode of MASH to his credit after this. But this is a good episode. So you talked about the sequence with Radar talking about the carbon paper. Do you have a favorite joke or line, or is that the sequence?
Technically, that is my favorite sequence, which isn't a line, but that whole entire run I think is fantastic. But my second one, which I want to point out for a reason, is when he and Henry are talking about paperwork, and he says to Radar, "Do you understand this? Any other show would have been fine with, I try not to," which is what he says. But then he follows it up with, "It just slows up the work." Like, I love, like I try not to. Any other show, that would have been the joke. Fine, you move on. But then he adds, "It just slows up the paperwork. It slows up the work."
I love. I think a lot of us have been there, where you've worked at some place and you've been encountering a bunch of rules that make no sense to you, and you're like, you know what? I don't even care anymore.
And it's
I'll
funny,
just do it.
It's funny because in my job, I am a trainer of new employees. So sometimes they will say, "Oh, well, why do you do that?" And then sometimes I have to think. Sometimes I have to realize, oh, I don't even know why I do this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know why it's done this way, but it just is. It's just easier to just roll along with. But yeah, I like that. I love that Radar has self-actualized enough that he just realizes it doesn't really matter about this is where you initial to initial that you didn't initial. He doesn't care. He doesn't care anymore. It's just he's found a way to work his way through it. And that's how he's going to do it. And so, and I even love that look on McLean Stevenson's face, where he's almost in tears a little, where he just looks completely like, "Do you understand any of this?" Like, he's just like so demoralized. He's like, "Do you understand any of this, Radar?" "No, no, sir, I don't." I just love that he just goes along with that. That is a really great moment.
I have just come to appreciate the dialogue and the timing between Henry and Radar, or well, mm-hmm. the actual actors. I mean, I just, and next time I'll try for that not to be my favorite joke, but I love it.
Yeah, it is a really good line. My favorite joke is actually the very beginning of the episode, where they're talking about the getting a boot, and he says, the Hawkeye's talking about how they're willing to even bribe the countries involved to end the war early. And they talk about Hawkeye says he's in for $10, and Trapper says, "I'm in for $10. And he says, "$20. How can they turn us down?" And then Trapper says, "We could even go to $25. But don't tell them that in the beginning. I love that.
It's a bargaining tool.
Yeah, I love that the, they've both wordlessly agreed to go along with this bit. And then just, you know, do, of course, yeah, don't tell them that in the beginning. Don't tell them you're going to add an extra $5 to the we have a running joke, me and my girlfriend, about like making offers that we know people cannot accept, but we do it by putting the number on a piece of paper and folding it, sliding it across the table, as if somehow that makes it more impressive. And we were looking at a house down at the shore the other day, and we're like, you know what? We'll offer them $500 for that beach house. So just slide the paper across the table. You can't possibly turn it down. And so this is that kind of joke. And of course, delivered perfectly by Wayne Rogers. Just that perfect pause of just, but don't tell them that in the beginning. I just think that's such a great, that's such a great bit. So, yeah, it's a solid episode. It really is. And you know, when you have a show on as long as MASH was on, you can't help but end up repeating some format, some plots. I mean, in fact, later on, we'll get to very later on, there's a plot line with Potter that is almost directly a remake of a previous episode, almost down to the beats. And here, it's early on. I mean, we're still in the first and second seasons. But I also don't think when you have a show that gets into the hundreds of episodes, there's nothing wrong with occasionally redoing an episode, especially back then when you figured nobody was seeing these in reruns. They were just gone forever. So it's like, why not take another pass at it and do it better? And I really think that they did that here. They took the general concept of Long John Flap and then made it, added some grit to it, made it funnier, and just made it generally more interesting. So I think it's a winner of a show.
Absolutely agree.
Sean, thank you so much for coming back on, man. I always enjoy talking to you.
Absolutely. Can't wait to be back to the Swamp.
Yes, you're going to be back later on in season two for another really, really good episode of the show. So that is going to do it. Of course, if you want to listen to back episodes of the show, go to the website, firewaterpodcast.com. There you can leave a comment. You can leave a review for the show on Apple Podcasts. I would appreciate that. We will be covering those at the end of this season. We are always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. So that's going to do it, everybody. Thanks for listening. And until next week, that is all.
Look, we're good, but we can't get you a transfer to Japan.
I only want 3 days. I want to visit a Shinto shrine. I want to see the kabuki. I want to spend an evening with a girl that I can think about in years to come when my wife is talking to me.